Welcome to We Rebel. We were on a brief hiatus.
We were.
Yes.
I got very ill.
That I'm surprised. like you're so much better. Your world's better than you were a couple weeks ago.
It was bad.
Yes. And you know, I had issues going on and Nick is off in space.
Everybody needs a break every now and then. Nick clearly is still taking a break because he is not with us this week.
Yes. But he will hopefully be back next week with us.
Hopefully. Are we hopeful?
I would like to think so.
Okay.
Just for a brief glimmer of hope.
A glimmer of hope. Okay.
He's going to be so mad that we said that.
He's going to be really mad at us, but we do love him.
We're going to have a meeting. It's fine.
But we'll get it. We'll get a gently angry text.
Yes.
And then I'll respond with a funny meme. Anyways.
Yes. We have a great interview later.
Super
on.
Great interview. Yes. Lara Menino of Drain the NRA. She came on and gave us a lot of information. Specifically data, which is really exciting, around how your money, how you can also vote with your money and, you know, do those kinds of things specifically as it relates to gun control. Yeah. So speaking of gun control, we wanted to start with that since it's kind of the overarching theme of our episode here with our guest. There was a national school walkout. Earlier this week and on Wednesday. And many news outlets reported on this, but we're specifically looking at an article from the New York Times by Vivian Yee and Alan Blinder. And, you know, it reports on hundreds of teenagers walking out at schools across the country, you know.
North Carolina, Michigan, New Jersey, Connecticut, Indiana, Florida, like everywhere.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's kind of the first coordinated action of the student-led gun movement for gun control. It marshaled the same elements that had defined it ever since the Parkland shooting: eloquent young voices, equipped with symbolism, social media savvy, rising and resolved. This is all from the article, and it's just really, one of my coworkers sent me a text of her daughter, like, leaving her school building, you mm-hmm. know, and it was a picture, and it's just... it's exciting because when I say young people on the podcast, I feel like I'm usually referring to college kids, you mm-hmm. know, because I'm like, oh, young people need to get involved. And like that, you just get to start vote as you entering college and that kind of thing. And it was just, it was really exciting to see truly children mm-hmm. and middle schoolers and high schoolers doing activism, right. Period, specifically around this issue, period, and that is involving them. It's cool. It's great.
It involves them. And, you know, because I've seen some criticism, especially how the way the media, quote, the media portrays it, by parents saying like, oh, well, my child is too young to be involved in this. Well, there is no age limit on children being shot at because we've seen that.
Because they are getting shot at all ages.
Okay, so, you know, kindergartners, all right? It could be your preschooler tomorrow. So these are all very important things to be aware of. So if your child doesn't have to be ingrained in gun violence, but I think their safety is important. And I think they just because they can't vote on something doesn't mean they can't have an opinion about it.
Exactly.
So I think it's very great that these kids are organizing. And this isn't even the formal national school walkout. That's still happening in April.
Yep.
April 20th.
Yep.
So those are still going on.
Yeah. And so I think it's, you know, and then it was interesting to also see kind of the cascading effects of that. There's an article in Fortune, titled "Some TV Networks Are Suspending Programming During Today's Student Walkout." And so Viacom, you know, including that's a huge mega media company, including MTV, BET, Nickelodeon, Comedy Central. They are showing solidarity with the school walkout by suspending regular programming for 17 minutes. At 10 a.m. across local time across the board. And then they also had students take over MTV's social media accounts. And it was exciting because I feel like we'll get into this later in our interview, you know, talking to these big corporations and actually getting to the people that can make choices like this and can make choices like no longer giving discounts to NRA members. Mm-hmm. You know, it's exciting to see whereas some people were still in it with them, like FedEx, with Viacom, you know, they're actually taking a stance and supporting it along the way. So it's exciting to see that. And then the other thing we wanted to briefly touch on with gun control, this is an article from CBS News. The House passes a bill to improve school safety in the wake of the Parkland shooting. And so the House has approved a bill that in the wake of the shooting that killed 17 children or teenagers, whatever you want to call them, humans. The bill authorizes $500 million over 10 years for grants to improve training and coordination between schools and local law enforcement and help identify signs of potential violence before they occur. And so the vote marks the first gun-related action by Congress since the February 14th shooting. And programs like these have the support of school safety advocacy groups like the Sandy Hook Promise, which is also one of our partners of our guests organization. The House Speaker Paul Ryan says the bill provides, quote, a multi-layered approach to identify threats so authorities can intervene before violence occurs, which is lovely. I love multi-layered approaches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm multi-layered, but like it's, you know, but it's like. It's a small step.
It's a small step, yes, that we should take as a victory. And we take them as we get them and we keep moving. So we'll get into specific details in our interview. But that's where we kind of wanted to jump off with, you know, all these young people making shit
doing
happen.
Doing great things.
Doing it. They're out there. Yeah. They're like, we got homework, but bye. It's 10 a.m. I'm going to fight for my life. And I'm like, okay, into it.
I don't think we had pressing issues when we were in high school.
It's really interesting. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that and I was reflecting on my childhood and I was like, what is the biggest political thing that I remember? And I just remember being at school when 9/11 happened.
That, yes, I do remember
and
that.
And then a lot of conversations, and I went to a wonderful high school. And I was in middle school at the time. And so there was a lot of, after that happened, there was a lot of, you know, I remember like an assembly to talk about it. And then we talked about it in homeroom and we talked about it. And like we had like small groups and things like that. And so my school took a very proactive approach to make sure that everyone kind of understood and felt heard. But I mean, we were in Georgia. So, you know, it was kind of like, what is terrorism?
Yeah, well, even in Michigan, because especially the area I grew up in, we had a lot of Middle Eastern people, a large population of it. And so I think it was still, I probably was introduced to someone, but I don't actively remember meeting someone that was Muslim before even knowing what that word meant.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, me neither.
Yeah, like I didn't know. And so, you know, that no one was really teaching that. We weren't really learning about that religion. And so it wasn't until that happened. And then all of a sudden cries of terrorism rained from the sky. And like, I think that's when people had to start realizing, oh, we need to, okay, let's address this. Let's talk about who these people are and not lambast an entire religion or race of people.
Shall we move on to another happy topic?
Yes. Emily's favorite topic. Russia. In case you were wondering that, you know, Russia is...
what was going on with our energy grid, just in case you wanted to check in on that.
Yeah, so U.S. says the Russian hackers targeted American energy grid. This is a political article by Tim Starks. So the Trump administration on Thursday accused Russian government hackers of carrying out a deliberate, ongoing operation to penetrate vital U.S. industries, including the energy grid, a major ratcheting up of tensions between the two countries over cybersecurity. So it says the hackers penetrated targeted companies to a surprising degree, including copying information that could be used to gain access to the computer systems that control power plants. It's the kind of access that experts say would have given Moscow the ability to turn off the power if it wanted to. Here's my question. I mean, not only...
Guys, this is terrifying. I don't know if you've watched... what was the documentary that won... this year,
Icarus.
Yeah, I watched it, and it's really interesting and terrifying because if Russia goes to that extent for sports, which let's just talk about what sports are. They're important. I love them. Athletes are amazing. It's a game. It's a game. If they'll go to that extent of so many things,
yes,
lying, cheating, using drugs,
just to have
manipulating,
their super athletes.
Just to
yes.
have athletes win. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, tinfoil hattie, but it's for real.
But now, here's what I was going to say is that so regardless if Russia or, you know, anyone, regardless if Russia is going to do it, why is there an ability for anyone to hack into a system in which they can turn off the power in our country?
And are we hacking into people's systems? Because I would like to not do that. You know, like, who's hacking whom? Everyone's hacking everyone.
Like, I would just think I would like that to not be an option.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about the threats of nuclear war, biological war, but here's just, you know, turning off your electricity.
Yeah, like, you hungry? Oh, yeah, I mean, your food's going to spoil.
We already have natural disasters wiping out power in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, now and then giving contracts to fix that to, you know, small event companies in Atlanta, Georgia, which didn't go so well. But yeah, no, that is, I like your approach.
Yes. And so
your question, I suppose.
Yeah, and so just one thing I want to point out. So after the alert went out, Energy Secretary Rick Perry, who does not know anything about what he's doing, warned members of the House Appropriations Subcommittee Thursday that he's, quote, not confident the federal government has an adequate strategy in place to address the, quote, hundreds of thousands of cybersecurity attacks directed at the U.S. every day. So cool.
So that's exactly what I want to hear from our director of energy.
So
not confident. Great.
It's a little awesome.
What's your plan?
Yeah, a little scary. Just a tad.
Terrifying.
So I guess, unfortunately, I have to say, to be continued.
Yeah, that's right.
We don't really know what's going to happen on that.
Everybody, the takeaway from this is go buy a bunch of batteries, buy a bunch of flashlights, get a cooler, get some canned food.
This is when antenna TV is important.
In California, we always have our earthquake kit ready. I'm going to just double the size of mine. So everybody across the country should just make a fake earthquake kit because, you know, TikTok.
Yes. All right. Switching gears here. Still on the Russia topic, though. Mueller subpoenas Trump Organization demanding documents about Russia. This is a New York Times article by Michael S. Schmidt and Maggie Haberman. What up, Maggie?
So
Special Counsel Robert Mueller has subpoenaed the Trump Organization in recent weeks to turn over documents, including some related to Russia, according to two people briefed on the matter. The order is the first known instance of the special counsel demanding records directly related to President Trump's businesses, bringing the investigation closer to the president. The breadth of the subpoena was not clear, nor was it clear why Mr. Mueller issued it instead of simply asking for the documents from the company, an umbrella organization that encompasses Mr. Trump's business ventures. Mr. Mueller ordered the Trump Organization to hand over records related to Russia and other topics he is investigating. So this is very interesting because I don't know if you remember earlier in the week, House Intelligence Republicans, they said that there was, they decided to end their investigation, about a year-long investigation into the 2016 Russian meddling. And they said there's no evidence of collusion. And Trump decided to respond in all caps on Twitter saying that, great, I'm absolved. There's nothing wrong. Nothing to see here. Don't pay attention to the man behind the curtain. And, you know, Mueller's not done. He's not done by any means looking into this situation. And although this subpoena went out a couple weeks ago, so this didn't happen this week. It's just it's now being reported. This is huge that this is coming back to him. And Trump is absolutely scared. And I think it's because it's out of his hands. I don't think he personally did everything himself, but I do believe he had people around him that assured him these things could happen and that no one would know about it. And now it's just the trail gets back to him. And whether if he didn't do any of it, he's guilty by association. And if he did know about it, he's definitely guilty. So it's very interesting that Mueller has these. So Mueller has already indicted 13 Russians and three companies accused of meddling in the 2016 presidential campaign. And on Thursday, the Trump administration included them in sanctions it leveled at Moscow as punishment for interference in the campaign and, quote, malicious cyber attacks, going back to this cybersecurity issue. So, you know, the web is getting a little even more tangled, but I think in a way we're starting to follow it. We're starting to figure out what's going on and we're getting back. So, I mean, I'm not going to say like, oh my gosh, this is the thing that's going to take Trump down. This is it. We're over. But it's worth noting that Mueller, I have to applaud him. He's doing really well with this investigation. I guess by my standards, I know nothing. But yeah, he's doing great.
James, you know a lot of things. Don't say that about yourself.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, look at the positivity that happens on this podcast when
Nick isn't here.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Nick is very friendly.
Oh, he's very funny.
Anyways,
yes.
Speaking of things that are chaotic, so Rex Tillerson, he found out via tweet that he was fired as Secretary of State from President Donald Trump.
Because that's normal.
And you know what I did? I just I looked at the other side. I did a little perusing on Fox News mm-hmm. about how this was reported. And they also, you know, from Washington, Donald Trump dumps Tillerson via tweet. Because I just wanted to make sure that that was truly how we're all saying it happened. Not that mm-hmm. it really matters, but I was just curious because mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, a lot of things happen via tweet. And I was like, well, maybe... You know, maybe someone heard that in passing in the hallway and like put it on the headlines.
But it's hard to.
If Fox News is also saying that it was via tweet, then it was.
I mean, I'm not saying they haven't twisted the truth before, but it's hard to dispute like a fact when everyone can see that.
See it, yes. I just trying to do our research and make sure that is in case. Very
good. You're a great journalist.
Thanks. That's really nice of you. Continue. Anyways, so Secretary of State Rex Tillerson learned he was fired on Tuesday from a tweet from his boss. Basically, what's interesting about it is kind of he was almost an afterthought. So the tweet reads, Pompeo, director of CIA, will become our new Secretary of State. He will do a fantastic job! Exclamation mark. Thank you to Rex Tillerson for his service! Exclamation mark. Gina Haspel will become the new director of the CIA and the first woman so chosen. Cool. Congratulations to all! Exclamation mark. So it's just, again, we talk about the organizational structure and stability or not of this mm-hmm. administration. And it's just another example of like, you know, if I found out I was fired via tweet, I would have some words with my boss because, you know, that's not how you do things.
Well, let's remember that Tillerson is the same guy who this is weeks ago.
CEO of ExxonMobil.
First of all, I remember when he was appointed, I thought this man was evil. He should not be there. But I will say this. He called Donald Trump out. He's the one that called him a moron. Their relationship has been tumultuous at best.
Yes.
But even Tillerson, you know, he did a press conference the other day. And even then he said in a statement, and this is very, very concerning to me and others, that there seems to be a certain unleashing of activity that we don't fully understand what the objective behind that is.
Right. Which ties into the next article mm-hmm. we wanted to talk about is CNN posted that 5 high profile departures in 2 weeks for Trump's quote, no chaos White House. So I think, you know, I think that Mr. Tillerson is referencing, I mean, I'm sure he's referencing a bunch of things we don't know about, but also mm-hmm. referencing this, you know, I think, you know, there's, like, if you're spending your time, fire people that aren't doing their jobs, okay. Mm-hmm. But if you're spending your time firing a bunch of people that you have brought on in a short period of time, like, even if he was the most stable, logical president that we have, like, this would still be a red flag. It would be like, what's happening? Like, mm-hmm. why are you, you know, like, this, his personality and our feelings on him as a president aside, like, this is not good news mm-hmm. considering it's also kind of old news because we've been talking about the revolving door of the mm-hmm. White House since he got in office.
And we still have to talk about the fact that there are members, there are positions in the State Department that haven't been filled. And now the man that was in charge of that is gone. So yeah. You know, like, these are the things where this is why we have to bring this up, because it's been a year plus of Trump's presidency and people are constantly getting fired, removed from positions, being appointed to things that they're not qualified for. So these are the people that are running our country. Yep.
And mm-hmm. just so everyone knows, the other people, so there's Rex Tillerson, who is Secretary of State. There's Gary Cohn, who is the National Economic Council Director. There's Hope Hicks, the White House Communication Director. John McGinty, the personal aide to the president. Josh Raffel, White House Communications Aide. Was that 5? That was 5.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, there's a rumor going around that H.R. McMaster will soon be fired too. But Trump doesn't want to do it quite yet. He wants to hold off for some unannounced reason.
Great. We'll add it to the list of unannounced things we don't know.
Right.
Anyways, so speaking of chaos, another person.
Oh, man. Okay.
That we should let go.
I talk so much negativity about this administration. But there's one person that I think deserves it the most, and that's Betsy DeVos.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A person, because, you know, education is a very Betsy. Important thing to me.
And the fact everyone.
That, and everyone. But yes. I don't know why I take it so personally, but when someone who is extremely unqualified for her position
and in charge of the future of children
and the access to education that these children have, and she blatantly, in this interview, stumbles her way to say that she hasn't visited schools that are doing poorly. And she says, no, I have not intentionally gone.
Which might we say, might we say, if you're trying to fix something, wouldn't we want to go to those schools first? Mm-hmm. And be like, what's the problem here? Because the problem here might, it could be any number of things, but maybe the problem starts with, oh, well, they don't have any chairs that are not broken. You know, like there's a, like my sister's a principal. There's a lot of really basic things that schools are fighting for that is taking their time so that they can't focus on training excellent teachers. They can't focus on innovative curriculum, or they can't focus on this other thing because, like, you know, they're underperforming because of very basic needs. Mm-hmm. So like I would just, I mean, I feel like, I mean, again, I don't, I'm not going to be the Secretary of Education for the country. But if I were to put my head in that mind space and it was my job to lead the future, I would start with the problems. And so I would go to the underperforming schools first.
But the problem that I had with her, and especially when she was first appointed, and this is what everyone called her out on, is that she is the one that's, you know, backing, you know, charter schools and all these for-profit institutions. And, you know, not everyone can afford that. Public education, while some schools do need the help, and that's why she should be going there to help fix them, you know, they're not always the best. So that's why, you know, they say like, oh, we'll go to these charter schools, but then you have to pay all this money. Not every family has the money to do
exactly
that. So education needs to be accessible for all.
Yeah.
And you can't just let these other schools go by the wayside because they're not pretty enough for you.
Yep.
You know, at least at the
they
very
all need
least,
to have working water fountains.
Yes, they need to
like
have
free and reduced lunch needs mm-hmm. to be an option for everyone that needs it. Like
they need playgrounds so they have somewhere
playgrounds.
To be active.
They need,
you know, they need updated
a custodian.
Textbooks. Custodian, like so they need like, all these things.
This is very a lot of the mm-hmm. challenges, you know, are hindered because of very basic needs.
So if you want to, it's a 60 Minutes interview from last week. So if you have a chance, you know, go on YouTube,
pour yourself
find the
a glass of wine.
You're gonna need it.
You know.
But I can only hope, you know, of all the firings that have been going on, I just hope she's somewhere on the chopping block. Because we need, I mean, if anything, give me someone.
I have a few names that would be an excellent replacement.
Please. But we really need to get someone in that position that will help these schools because it's embarrassing.
Yes.
As it is.
We're gonna go a little to the sad news, just to quickly go to the good news. We just wanted to acknowledge the bridge collapse that happened in Florida at the Florida International University. It was a newly installed pedestrian bridge connecting parts of the university. It collapsed on Thursday, crushing several cars. And so this is not really a political issue to our knowledge. No conspiracy theory has come out,
no.
Thank goodness. But we just wanted to acknowledge and hope that those families are, and people are getting the support they need and sending out, you know,
our condolences
to them. And Florida has had a rough couple months here. So I hope mm-hmm. that, you know, it's only up from here for them.
I hope so.
So speaking of... Yes. Up from here.
So,
things of good news before we jump into our interview.
Yes. So, Pennsylvania special election this past week, Connor Lamb Woo! Wins the 18th congressional district. It's referencing a New York Times article by Nate Cohn.
By 0.2%.
Yes. But the article.
Lies. Wait, did I just lie? No, by 0.2%.
You're correct.
Okay, great.
You're correct. Yes. So, the article by Nate Cohn. Josh Katz, Sarah Al-Mukhtar, and Matthew Block. So Connor Lamb, Democrat, pulled off a narrow but major upset by winning a special House election in the heart of Pennsylvania Trump country. So Lamb won in the state's 18th congressional district, a reliably Republican seat in recent elections and an area that Donald Trump won by nearly 20 percentage points in 2016. The victory is an ominous sign for Republicans ahead of this year's midterm elections, which is what we've been saying. It needs to happen. We need to threaten them. They need to be scared because we need to flip those seats. There are so many seats that are up. I think every member in the House is up for reelection. And so like, guys, just get out and vote because it is possible. We just watch that happen. No matter how many times Trump goes on some tirade, he goes to this random place just thinking that he can talk about himself for 45 minutes, briefly mention the candidate and then fly away. No, don't let that deter you. This, we can show up at these polls and we can vote and we can win. The margins are so narrow. Like I said, so like you have to, like we said, it's only 0.2% that he won by. So get out there. Every vote literally counts.
Yes. Yep. So there's a lot more of those coming up. So we we'll continue to report on them as they they are approaching and as they happen and afterwards. But we got a long list of those. So quickly before we end, this is just an interesting article I saw that I just wanted to throw out there because we don't really touch on things like this, but it was in NBC News, and the FDA moves to lower nicotine in cigarettes. What? By Maggie Fox. This was published on March 15th, but basically the Food and Drug Administration plans to lower the amount of nicotine in cigarettes to make them less addictive, which is an unprecedented move by the agency. The commissioner, Dr. Scott Gottlieb, said Thursday that the agency would propose the rule, opening a long bureaucratic process, but it's the boldest move yet against cigarette makers by the FDA, which only got permission to regulate tobacco products in 2009. So it's a really interesting and exciting moment for public health. Mm-hmm.
I was clapping only because cigarettes, I don't know, I have a personal aversion to them. I don't know. But, they're just so unhealthy. And we had this culture that told people that cigarettes were cool and no one got out of it for a while. I mean, we're better about it now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's still very active. And I think also something I'm thinking about, but vaping has become a big thing with children,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Vaping actual nicotine and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And it's, it's exciting to see that the FDA is thinking about how to make these things less addictive. Because
mm-hmm.
the harder it is to get them, the harder it is to poison your lungs.
All right, but what's a good addiction?
This
activism
podcast.
And this podcast.
Activism. But yours is activism. Better than mine. Anyways, we're really excited for Laura Menino. She is with us today from Drain the NRA. She's a co-founder. She's very eloquent. So stick around and listen to that.
All right. We'll see you guys in a second.
Hey, y'all. Welcome back to our interview portion of this week's episode. We're really excited. We have Laura Menino, who is one of the co-founders of Drain the NRA. Laura, thanks for coming on the pod.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So I just want to jump in, and know, when was that first spark for you where you knew you had to engage in activism beyond just voting? What was the moment or turning point where you were like, all right, this has got to be part of my life in a bigger way?
Sure. It was actually, I would say, around the Pulse nightclub shooting, which I think will be almost 2 years ago. I, like many people, when Sandy Hook happened, I thought, well, surely Congress will do something. And we keep waiting around and we all feel safe because Obama is our president, and there's surely something will click and happen and we can just blame Republicans forever and ever. And I had a child, and that really changed my perspective, and it really sort of changed my perspective about this world and what kind of world am I leaving for him and how safe is he in this world. And then the Pulse nightclub shooting happened when he was not quite a year old, and a local chapter of Moms Demand Action happened here in Los Angeles. So I met up at a Starbucks in Atwater, and I just immediately, there's just something that clicked where I just felt like this gun violence issue is not going to go away if we just leave it up to our elected officials. And it's on us to do something about this, which is what Moms Demand Action represents. And so for this time, I even navigated the presidential campaign through the gun violence issue. We would canvass for gun sense candidates. I was canvassing up in the 25th district for a gun sense candidate during the 2016 election. I loved that Hillary was one of the few, the only candidate who actually initiated conversation about gun sense. So I sort of saw everything through the lens of gun violence prevention. And then the worst thing happened. We have Trump, whom the NRA has given the most amount of money to a presidential campaign, was Trump. He gave over $30 million either in direct contributions or wow. in TV ads. So Trump, to me, is synonymous with the NRA. They are a two-headed beast, in my opinion. And so then the shooting in Vegas happened this past October, and I was involved with a lot of other resistant groups outside of gun violence. And after the shooting, me and a few other women met up in a living room, and I think like many things that happened this year, it's a group of fed up women getting together and deciding it's now time to do something. And some of us have been involved in the gun violence prevention cause, some are, we're new to it, and we all felt underwhelmed and that there just had to be more to be done. And what we recognized, and what I recognized myself, is that gun violence is, it's really a rat king of crises, and that can be incredibly overwhelming, but I think it also lends itself to a lot of opportunity to get involved in this issue. Gun violence is masculinity in crisis, it is white supremacy, it is a healthcare crisis, it's a child safety crisis, it's a suicide issue, a domestic abuse issue, a mass shooting issue, and a school safety issue. And not only that, a neighborhood violence and abuse of police force and police militarization issue. There's a lot of different ways to get in on this issue, and that could maybe be paralyzing, but I think it's really a great way to say, what speaks to me about this and how can I get involved? And so when we were looking around at this meeting, and we were just tooling around on the NRA website, I realized we looked and we saw that there was all of these corporate sponsors that were offering discounts and benefits and were advertising directly to NRA members as a member benefit. And, you know, I thought to believe that the NRA was kind of this fringe group that, yeah, they have 5 million people, but that's nothing compared to the rest of the majority of Americans who want gun sense. But, you know, corporations obviously feel differently, or otherwise they wouldn't be directly advertising to this group. And we reflected back on what were the most successful campaigns this past year. And we were looking at Sleeping Giants that goes ahead and puts pressure on companies who are advertising, who have Breitbart as a media buy, and asks them to take Breitbart off their media buy. Grab Your Wallet, which is getting Trump brands out of stores. How quickly Bill O'Reilly got off the air because we went after his advertisers. And we realize there's two opportunities to vote in this country, with your ballot at the ballot box and with your wallet. And I think the only way to shift a culture, and the only way we're going to change a policy is we change a cult culture. And the only way that we can change culture is what we do as consumers. So we then thought of this plan. Let's start putting together lists of politicians. Let's really attack the gun violence issues through the NRA and the power of the gun lobby and how powerful the gun industry is. So let's go after politicians that accept money from the gun lobby, and let's go after corporations that partner with the gun lobby. And we started to build these spreadsheets and all this information, and we thought our first focus would be to go after TrueCar, which advertised directly on the NRA member benefits page of the NRA website. TrueCar is publicly traded. It advertises nationally, but it's still a mid-sized company, and it's based here in Los Angeles. I'm sure they wouldn't really appreciate the negative attention. So we thought that this was sort of a low-hanging fruit that we can go after as our first campaign. So in the fall, we started a change.org petition. We wrote a letter to TrueCar executives outlining why it's not in their best interest to associate themselves with a divisive right-wing organization like the NRA, and by association, they're endorsing the NRA's agenda to halt sensible gun reform legislation. And on the fifth anniversary of the Sandy Hook tragedy in December, we got 20 people together and we protested in front of TrueCar. And this was months before the NRA boycott movement kind of took off. And then after that, we were like, we'll just build our website and keep moving along. TrueCar never really responded to us directly. And when Parkland happened, I was at home watching the coverage, and I emailed five of our core members with the subject line, "Fuck it, let's protest," because I think it's time for the gun violence community to take to the streets and just show and take up space in this world. You know, our public persona, our public space is vigils. We sit and we stand quietly and we hold candles, but we don't raise our voices, and we don't we don't show ourselves in a really energetic, loud way. And so we partnered up with Vocal Chapter Moms Demand Action, and we put together a rally in Pershing Square on President's Day. We had a huge turnout. And then from there, all of this attention and all of this focus on Twitter went towards boycotting NRA member benefits. And we realized, wow, we're already prepared with this info. And we just got into the mix along with Sync Progress and other Twitter users and causes that were going after it. And by the end of the week, TrueCar was no longer a member benefit, along with at least 15 other companies.
That's incredible that you guys, you know, organized a way to because it's smart. Everyone always says, like, go after the advertisers because that is the fastest way to affect these people. And, you know, so I'm looking at the spreadsheet. So for those listening, the website is drainthenra.com. And they have different tabs, as Laura was saying, for companies and for politicians. And you look at these spreadsheets of, you know, we have funds holding gun stocks, gun manufacturers, big box retailers. Mm-hmm. And then the one that really surprises me is the NRA TV spreadsheet that you have.
Yes.
So those are companies. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's Amazon, Apple, Google, Roku. These all like very popular. Everyone uses these things, but they all broadcast NRA TV. And, you know, and so, you know, when someone's looking at this, I'm quite sure it's a little daunting to them to say, like, oh, but I love these things. How can I boycott them? Like, this is how I, you know, like, and so they probably feel guilty giving up that thing that they love in order to kind of do a great progressive cause and, you know, attack the NRA. So, like, how do we balance that? How do we not feel like we have to give up, you know, our beloved possessions in order to make sure that we have some forward momentum in the country?
You're right. You're absolutely. That is a great question that we have asked ourselves. While with each passing week, we're trying to better refine and better articulate what our ask is, and to make the action doable for everyone. And you know, here I am asking people to boycott a part of Apple on my iPhone. So it's. And I think it's really interesting to reflect that Amazon and Apple, these are like utilities. These are just part of our lives, like, you know, water and heat and the gas company. So what we are trying to do now this past week, we really wanted to get really specific that it is actually Amazon Fire TV that streams NRA TV, not Amazon Prime Video, but the Amazon Fire. It's Google Chromecast that streams. It's Apple TV that streams. So we're asking people to just really articulate to Apple and to Amazon and to Google, stop streaming on these devices. I won't use them. I won't buy a Fire or an Apple TV. And I would say that you can go even further and say, you know what? I know you guys are a podcast, but you don't want to hear this. But just say, you know what? Maybe I'm not going to get my podcast through Apple Podcasts anymore. I'm going to go through another podcast service, or I'm not going to go through Apple Music, or for one day, I'm not going to use these things. And tell Apple the reason why I am not using your services is because you continue to stream what we believe is right-wing, fear-mongering, misogynist, sexist propaganda. And would you stream ISIS TV? Because we believe that the NRA is as close as possible to a domestic terror group. And we're trying to get these companies to realize that what they are doing is that they are just making hate speech available and therefore are complicit in fear-mongering that lends itself to the proliferation of guns and weapons of war. So we're trying to really refine, and we're trying to make these companies realize that we're doing our work to be as accurate as possible in our asks. But, you know, a few months, on March 1st, it was just a really broad, like, boycott everything. And it's like, well, how? How are we going to do that? So, so we're going after the devices that stream.
And I do want to ask, you know, so for a company like TrueCar, you know, how, what was that conversation like? Because I'm quite sure it wasn't automatically you bring up, hey, gun violence is a problem. They're like, okay, great, let's get rid of it. No, I'm quite sure there was some pushback. So what is it like going up against these companies to make these changes?
You know, for the most part, TrueCar ignored us. You know, we sent emails directly to their executives. We mailed a letter. We CC'd their board. We had thousands and thousands of people on a petition. We called them out on social media, and they ignored us for a really, really long time. And then within the first week after the boycott momentum started on Twitter and all these other companies, like the car rentals already left, TrueCar was holding out. And on Friday night, they just sent a simple tweet saying, we're ending our affiliation with the NRA. And they didn't directly contact us or reach out to us. They just sort of made the statement. So it's interesting. A lot of companies will ignore you. Roku, for example, wrote me back and said that NRA TV, they're not making any money, they're not making any advertising dollars with NRA TV, and NRA TV isn't violating their terms of service. The same excuse that Twitter still allows neo-Nazis and our president to be on their platform. So I think that, you know, we're seeing different reactions. A lot of it is just ignoring until they realize that they just have to do something.
That's really interesting, because I feel like, yeah, you know, people forget that these big companies, you know, they feel untouchable, but, you know, mm-hmm. a corporation is just a bunch of people in a building working.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I also wonder, I mean, this information you have on your website is amazing, because I'm a big believer of, let's go get the data. Let's figure out what is happening and then do something. Like, I can talk all night and day about how I don't want, you know, young people to have guns, but I need to know the data, which is why I like, you know, every town's website and showing you exactly what the laws mm-hmm. are in different mm-hmm. areas of the country. And so, you know, I wonder if part of this pushback is finding who are our ambassadors, who are our champions within these companies, because there's a lot of Democrats and progressive thinkers working at these places. You know, I mean, at what point do these companies start listening to their consumers and their employees?
Right. It was really fascinating at the TrueCar protest. For the most part, we knew that we were making people nervous when a giant pizza delivery showed up to go directly into the office. Like, the employees were afraid to walk outside.
Wow.
And we could sort of see them at the window just sort of staring at us as we were calling. We were doing like some Game of Thrones shame chant. One of the security guards is outside taking pictures of us and then texting them to somebody. So we realized, okay, somebody's paying attention. We're making them uncomfortable, but what they're doing is that they're not going to put themselves in the position of acknowledging publicly that we're making them uncomfortable.
Right.
But there's evidence that we're doing that. And to speak about, you're right. Another reason why we went to after TrueCar is, like, your headquarters are in Santa Monica, this bastion of liberalism and progressivism. So clearly, you know, if the residents of Santa Monica know what's going on, and maybe there's plenty of employees. They didn't know that TrueCar was advertising on the NRA's website until maybe that day. And we hope that we put pressure on them. And we're going to a little bit more concerted of talking to and going to their board and saying, does this represent your shareholders' vision? Does this represent your values as a company? So we really do. We're trying to get really specific when we're using our language about who our audience is. And
right.
when we're talking directly to a corporation, we have to say, is this part of your values as a corporation? Does this represent your shareholders? Does this represent your customers? And that is what they're going to pay attention to. And then for everybody else, as consumers, you have to say, does this relationship, is this in alignment with your values as a consumer? What I think has been so empowering about this is that, look, these companies, these member benefits, this is maybe a drop in the bucket for both these corporations and for the NRA. Maybe this isn't going to financially hit them. Maybe there's probably going to be members who are still going to renew their memberships. Maybe some won't. But what it does is empowering people to feel like they've done something. And people have felt so powerless on the gun issue. You know, there's no faster way to kill a human, to take human life, and yet we've been the slowest to make significant policy changes. And we've all sort of thrown up our hands and said, well, it's Congress, and what can we do? And both parties are complicit. Both parties have failed us. I think it is a partisan issue, but the only thing that's nonpartisan about guns is that both parties have failed us. Republicans are complicit and take money, and actually, really, truly, whether they take a dime or not, I do believe they're okay with the unfettered proliferation of guns. And Democrats have just sort of waved the white flag and said, okay, well, at least we're not Republicans. And we have to hold both parties accountable. And I think what's happening now is that now people are engaged in this issue because they understand what it means to be a consumer and they understand what it means to withhold money and to put pressure on a company. So now people are researching who the NRA is. How does the NRA work? What do you mean politicians are taking money? What's the difference between PAC money and direct contributions? People are engaged in this issue. And so by the time November rolls around, they're going to, A, put pressure on Democrats who want to ride this blue wave and make them articulate a gun violence policy. And they're going to do their damnedest to be a single vote. I'm hoping that guns can be a single issue voter, the same way that people vote on choice or healthcare, that I hope people come go to the ballots and they're there to vote the NRA out of Congress. So that's what we're doing right now, is that we're empowering people with information and feel like you can make a change and you can make a difference.
And I love how specific your information is as well. I think that is so essential. You know, I think for our listeners, in addition to the companies online, they also have a list of politicians with how much lifetime funding they've taken from the gun lobby and how long they've been in office and all of the above. It's really,
and it's Republicans helpful. And Democrats too. You're seeing they get this money, which is very interesting to me.
It is really interesting. To speak on that, we have a lot of updating to do on our politicians. That information we got sourced from Open Secrets, which is an amazing, amazing website. If you want to find money and have a lot of who's taking different sort of lobbying money, it's a great resource. And those numbers have changed. They've all gone up since we last posted that in December, because a whole new cycle has already happened. So we're going to also continue to flesh it out with not only direct campaign contributions, but PAC advertising money, as well as NRA ratings. So that, as the midterms are heating up, we're going to have a lot more info. And we really wanted to highlight Democrats because, there are Democrats in red states that do take gun lobby money. And we have to put pressure. If we want new candidates now who are articulating a gun violence policy, then we have to hold the head honchos of our party accountable. And those are some of the red state senators and red state members of Congress who take gun lobby money. And we're going to encourage them, you know, to answer for that. And this is a really great opportunity to donate those contributions to Sandy Hook Promise or to the victims of Parkland or Vegas or all the numerous other tragedies that have happened. This has to be a deal breaker. If you're going to be a Democrat, you cannot accept money from the gun lobby. We have to be the party of representing gun violence survivors and victims' families, and we have to be better than the Republicans. And we have to hold our politicians accountable, and we have to make the party move left on this issue. And the only way we're going to do that is calling them out and putting pressure on them to articulate a policy.
And that's the next step then. So, you know, it's in terms of legislation. So, right. So if we accomplish our goal, hopefully sometime in a hopefully near future, that the NRA does not have so much influence on our legislators and that we can actually make some common gun laws, how do we now get our politicians to be on the right side? Because the common argument is our Second Amendment rights, and that, you know, we don't want to take the guns away. You're trying to take our guns away. And like, so how do we need to find what are we doing now? What's our next step to make sure that we're getting the correct legislation in place?
I think we have to look at and be inspired by what happened with same-sex marriage and healthcare. We all, including Democrats, everyone said, single payer or universal health care isn't possible. Same-sex marriage is never going to be possible. It's going to be a state thing. We can never do it. But we started talking about it, and we started talking about it on a national level, and then the conversation began to shift, and then the policy followed. And I invite one of the frustrating things I see from Democratic candidates, as well as more mainstream gun violence groups that I support and we should all be unified, is that I invite everyone to no longer coddle Second Amendment revisionism. You even sort of see this with some of the students. They'll start things off with, I believe in the Second Amendment, but. And what we're already doing is we're playing into the hand of the gun lobby, who has used our Constitution as a marketing scheme to sell more guns. Mm-hmm. So I think we just have to stop doing that. And we have to just start really just holding their feet to the fire and saying, your perception of the Second Amendment is actually inaccurate. It is, you're being sold something by a gun lobby that doesn't exist. You are not a well-regulated militia, and you don't have the right to weapons of war. You don't have a right to have a gun if you are a domestic abuser or there are some other red flags that came up in your record. So we have to just, I don't know if we need to repeal the Second Amendment, but I think we can remove its power when we stop electing people who use it as a marketing scheme, and therefore we disempower the NRA who uses it as a marketing scheme, mm-hmm. and also Democrats have to stop coddling this point of view. That is just wrong. So that's going to be a longer haul. But I challenge these candidates right now who want to ride this blue wave to stop saying, I believe in the Second Amendment, but. And I also challenge and invite the gun violence community to stop using that, because we're just playing into the NRA's hands.
That's interesting. I think we've, a lot of our past guests have brought up this idea of language and mm-hmm. ensuring that we're thinking about what we're saying. You know, I think we had an interesting pair of women on a few weeks ago from the Immigrants Defenders Law Center here in California about how, you know, the people that are working in immigration talk about all 11 million, whereas what mm-hmm. the Democrats are, quote unquote, you know, taking to the Hill is the DREAM Act, which is children,
you
know, and we love children right. and we want them in all you know, all the above. But like, By already saying like they didn't come, the term like they didn't come here out of any choice of their own automatically implies that coming here out of a choice of their own is mm-hmm. a bad thing, you know? And so I think that that's a really interesting point that people need to think, that need to acknowledge what you just said, that by reiterating the rhetoric we already have, you're buying into it, and you might believe in the Second Amendment, and that's fine, but you're giving away your power by stepping mm-hmm. into that space. And so
and it's playing small ball, and I think now
yes.
like immigration and healthcare, the stakes cannot be higher, so we have to start communicating what our moonshot goals are. So saying, just being like, the Second Amendment, the NRA is going to go after you whether you start off every sentence, I believe in the Second Amendment, but, or if you go out there and say, I'm going to take all your guns, melt them, turn them into intersexual feminist folk art, and replace all the Jim Crow Confederate statues with it. Like, the NRA is going to go after you regardless, so you might as well start communicating with moonshot goals. And I invite the Democrats, and I invite Democrat candidates, and I invite the gun violence community to say, this is what we believe in. We believe in a federal universal background checks. We believe in a federal mandatory waiting period. We believe in a federal the buying age to 21, and a federal ban on military-style assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. And we keep saying that and saying that and saying that and saying that and saying that. And as voters, we make sure we put pressure on our candidates to keep saying that and articulating that. And then when we get them into office, we make sure that they actually do it. So we just have to keep repeating the same thing over and over and over again, because that's what the Republicans do. We have to be asked to learn that it is all about language, and we have to just keep repeating it. And then from there, we repeal things like Stand Your Ground and all of this awful stuff that is just racism plus gun violence. And I'm sure that's what immigration activists are doing too. It's like, okay, the DREAM Act was like a stepping stone to get people to talk about this, but now it's, we have to challenge ourselves to be bolder. If we're not going to be bold, then we can't expect any change on the other side.
I completely agree with everything. That's very, what I love about that is it's so specific. You know, there's a mission, oh, yeah, that is, this is what we want, these are the things, and yeah, as long as we stick true to the goals that we want and the actual legislation we want to get, you know, yeah, you can't have the cracks in the system. The NRA can't try to infiltrate and twist your story around. Like, these are very common sense and tangible things that we can accomplish, and so they definitely can, they can, and I think will be made into law, and hopefully our kids can go to school and be safe and not have to worry about getting shot and have to do these drills.
I mean, there's a generation that is tired of being hunted, and I think the Democrats have to pay attention to that. Are you going to be of the party of this generation that's tired of getting killed? Yeah, it's a real opportunity, and I hope our politicians live up to it.
So, Laura, is there anything else you want to tell our listeners before we go, just how they can get involved or anything they can do, what their next step could be?
Sure, absolutely. If you are, the first thing you can do is you can go to our website, drainthenra.com. At the bottom of our homepage, you'll see an opportunity to join our mailing list. And we're going to be sending out our first weekly newsletter tomorrow, so that's exciting. Go and look at the spreadsheets and the information we have. And if there's something that speaks to you, if it makes you crazy that this one company is still still with the NRA, go. Do something, you know, send a postcard, send a letter, call them, email them, and let us know, because we want to celebrate the action you took. We're trying to give, we want to give you information so you can be empowered to take your own action. So use the information. And the thing that has warmed my heart the most is when students have actually, you know, tweeted us in pictures of them, you know, doing postcards and starting their own little de facto Drain the NRA chapter in their own school. And that's just what makes it all worth it for us. Also, you can follow us. Please follow us on social media at Drain the NRA on Twitter and Instagram. And our Facebook page is Drain NRA Blood Money. And every day we are rolling out a daily schedule of action. So on Monday, we are focusing on NRA sponsors, member benefits. On Tuesday, we are focusing on politicians. Wednesday, we're focusing on divesting. Thursday, we're focusing on NRA TV. And Friday, we're putting this specific focus on FedEx. So every day we have a new thing. So please follow us on Twitter so you can get actions. We, if you're here in Los Angeles, we're going to be marching at March for Our Lives, and we'll be meeting at Casey's Pub downtown with other gun violence prevention groups. So come on by in the morning before marching, and we'll give you some signs and some buttons and stickers, and please march with us. And also here in LA on Saturday, April 14th at 3:00, we are going to have our very first general interest meeting at the Silver Lake Community Church on Hyperion. So please come to that and learn how you can get more involved, because we, it's just, there's a core of us that are doing graphics and research, and it's an amazing, but we would love more help. That's where you can find us.
I love it. Activism never sleeps, and neither do you, because you have a small child that you're taking care of and you're trying to drain the NRA. You're incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I have to say, just to give a shout out to the students of Parkland, and not only them, but everybody else who is a victim and a survivor of gun violence. From Columbine on and even before, what the Parkland students have done is they have really changed the narrative, because they didn't start from a place of talking points or trying to play nice with anyone. They spoke from their heart, and they spoke from their gut, and they spoke from logic. And we have to constantly serve that spirit and that energy. And so, you know, I should probably shift everything and say, we didn't get a bunch of people at a rally. Unfortunately, 17 people who lost their lives got a bunch of people at a rally. Unfortunately, 17 people lost their lives, along with the countless other people who have lost their lives since Columbine, got people to come and check out our website. So we have to just remember the people who, victims and survivors and those who are raising their voice. It's an interesting commentary in this country that I'm almost 40 years old and I'm a mom with a mortgage and my heroes are 17-year-old kids. Just how broken of this culture we have that we are just hanging on to what these students are doing. So I just encourage everybody to just get in on this issue somehow, no matter what direction it is, and do it to serve them.
Amazing. Well, Laura, thank you so much for your time. And, you know, for all of our listeners, DrainTheNRA.com, and the links to everything Laura mentioned go back to there, so please visit that. And then you can find us at We Rebel Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and Apple Podcasts. And you can email us
at WeRebelPodcast@gmail.com. We love emails, so
and
send them to us.
We always reply. So I hope everyone has a great week. Get out there and do what you can to drain the NRA. Thanks,
y'all.
All
right, we'll see you next week.
Campfire.
Everyone, this is Betsy Stover.
And I'm Amanda Allen.
And we do a podcast called Why Mommy Drinks.
It's the two of us sitting down with a guest each week, and we share all of those amazing shit shows that eventually break us and possibly lead to drinking.
That's right. Our kids drive us to drink on the regular. So we are doing a live podcast taping, actually, on April 9th at 7:30 p.m. It's in Los Angeles at a place called The Three Clubs on Vine Street.
And we're going to have special guest Jamie Denbo on our show, which is awesome because she was our first guest. And she's hilarious and amazing.
Yeah, and we're celebrating like a one-year anniversary. So come on down. We're going to have cocktails.
It's free.
It's free.
So come out, watch the show, and we want to meet you.
Why, Mom?